leaving an independent broker-dealer for a registered investment advisor, an RIA, comes down to three questions. Not your asset number and not how irritated you are with the platform. Three questions, and most advisors guess at the first one instead of answering it. Today, I'll walk you through all three in the order that keeps you out of trouble. Quick note before we get into it, Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. This one's for the advisor who's already independent. You made the hard move once, you built a practice on a broker-dealer platform that belongs to someone else, and now the grid, the affiliation fees, and the technology you didn't pick have you weighing a second move. By the end, you'll know how your revenue mix picks the structure, whether you have to give up commission business, what really happens to your FINRA registration, and how to choose between joining an existing RIA and building your own. Start with the money. An RIA charges fees for advice. That one sentence drives the whole analysis, because whatever share of your production still comes from commissions, annuity trails, mutual fund trails, brokerage tickets, insurance written through the broker dealer, doesn't fit inside a pure RIA, and it has to go somewhere. So the first honest exercise is mapping your trailing 12 months of revenue. How much of it bills as an advisory fee, and how much is trail revenue you'd hate to abandon? Advisors tend to guess at their mix, and they tend to guess optimistically. Pull the actual production reports instead, because the number you find sets up everything that follows. A book that's overwhelmingly advisory can move into a full RIA with almost nothing left behind. A meaningful commission slice isn't a deal breaker, but it changes the design, which raises the question I hear most. Do you have to give up the commission business? No, that's what the hybrid model exists for. Advisory work runs through the RIA, your own or one you've joined, while a FINRA registration held through a broker-dealer covers the commission business that remains. Plenty of independent broker-dealers support the arrangement because they'd rather keep your brokerage business alongside your outside RIA than lose you entirely. Many advisors treat it as a bridge, hybrid first, full RIA later, once the fee side can stand on its own. The full RIA is the other branch. You drop the registration, the firm operates fee only, and the brokerage revenue ends. One detail that surprises people: a fixed insurance practice can survive that move because fixed products run on state insurance licenses rather than a securities registration. Variable products do need the registration, so a book with meaningful variable business points toward hybrid or a deliberate wind down. Neither branch is more virtuous. Hybrid means wearing two regulatory hats with the oversight that comes with each. Full RIA is simpler to run and simpler to explain to clients, but it asks you to be honest about what the commission revenue is actually worth to you. Choose from the revenue map, not from an identity. Fee only as a label is worth nothing if it means abandoning business. Your clients still need service. Now, the part most write-ups skip entirely. What happens to your FINRA registration when you drop it? Once you leave a broker-dealer without joining another one, the registration starts to lapse. Stay out of the brokerage world long enough and the licensing exams come back into play. FINRA runs a continuing education program that can stretch that window for advisors who enroll on time. But the practical point stands: dropping the registration is close to a one-way door, and how wide the doorway stays depends on paperwork you file when you leave. Decide deliberately. Don't let the clock decide for you. And dropping FINRA is not dropping regulation. A registered investment advisor answers to the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, or to state securities regulators, depending on the size of the firm. You register as an investment advisor representative, most commonly by passing the Series 65 exam. The firm owes its clients a fiduciary duty, and it files a public disclosure called Form ADV, laying out its business and its conflicts. Some advisors read this move as an escape from oversight. It isn't. It's a change of regulator and a change of standard, and the fiduciary standard is in some ways the more demanding one. Question two, then, do you want to run infrastructure or use someone else's? Because the move itself is a fork. A tuck-in means joining an existing RIA that already has compliance and technology in place and bringing your practice under their umbrella. A full build means starting your own firm from the entity up. Your registration, your compliance program, your custody relationship, your technology stack. Same destination on the map, completely different journeys. Build. And somebody has to pick the custodian, negotiate the software contracts, and answer the regulator's exam letter. That somebody is you or someone you hire. Tuck in, and your week stays pointed at clients instead of operations. In exchange for using tools someone else selected and following a compliance program someone else administers. A simple test. If what frustrates you at the broker-dealer is the product menu and the grid, a tuck-in probably solves your actual problem. If what frustrates you is answering to anyone at all, it'll chafe within a year. And some advisors do both in sequence. They tuck in, watch how a well-run RIA operates from the inside, then build their own with that education already paid for. Question three should actually be first on your calendar. What does your agreement control on the way out? Independent contractors sometimes assume the paperwork is lighter than an employee's. Sometimes it is. The only way to know is to read it months before you plan to act. Three things to find in your copy: how it defines client information and what you may do with it, the scope and length of any non-solicitation language, and any forgivable loan still on the books. Because leaving before a note is fully forgiven generally means the unforgiven balance comes due. The broker protocol may touch your move too. Created back in 2004 by Smith Barney, Merrill Lynch, and UBS, it's a voluntary agreement between firms. When both the firm you're leaving and the firm you're joining are signatories, you may take five pieces of information for the clients you personally served. The official protocol text spells out name, address, phone number, email address, and account title. Anything past those five fields is prohibited. No account numbers, no copies of statements or firm documents. Take more and you forfeit the protection. A protected departure has mechanics of its own, starting with a written resignation to branch management that includes a copy of the client information you're taking. And membership shifts. More than 2,000 firms were on the administrator's October 2025 list, including plenty of independent broker-dealers and RIAs. But some of the biggest names stepped in and then stepped right back out around 2017 and 2018. So the list gets checked fresh every time, and a non-solicitation clause in your own agreement can bind you even when the protocol otherwise covers the move. This is exactly the stretch where you want a specialist most advisors don't have. There's no securities attorney on call at most independent practices, and the broker-dealer's compliance department works for the broker-dealer. An attorney who reads these agreements for a living can tell you in about an hour how your exit is likely to play out. lining that person up is the first concrete step of any serious plan before resignation letters, before custodian paperwork. One more point before I wrap up. Plenty of advisors run this whole analysis and stay because the platform genuinely earns what it charges. That's a legitimate outcome. The ones who come to regret the decision usually never ran the analysis at all. They stayed by default while the frustrations compounded, or they jumped at a recruiter's pitch without reading their own paperwork first. And the road itself is busy. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. The move is common enough to have a playbook. Yours runs in order. The revenue mix picks the structure, and the paperwork sets the timeline. If you want a structured way to run the three questions against your own practice, we built a short assessment for exactly that. 6 questions, free, on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. Nobody calls you afterward. It just shows you where you stand. You already proved you can build. This round is just deciding what to build next. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.